Can I say your name so everybody knows everybody?
Sharad.
Toby.
Michael.
History.
Bill.
Marcello.
Elder.
Maya.
Nicholas.
Dave.
Gotcha.
Gilbert.
Brown.
Yeah, well, we don't teach you anything here, and we don't tell you anything. Understand that. What we do is point toward and ask you to look to where we're pointing to see for yourself. Because no matter what you believe or what you don't, there's nothing that anybody can ever give you. And there's nothing you can ever get. So try to get something. You're looking in the wrong direction. And what we point to is not anything new. That's why we say there's nothing you ever get in that. You'll see it's the base of all the great traditions if you look closely. There's nothing you can ever get, and what we point to is the base of all the great traditions if you look into closely enough. In Hinduism, for instance, they call it Advaita. Advaita translated means non-duality, and they just try to describe non-duality by saying it's one without a second. And they put one without a second on because even the idea of one implies that there could be other than one. So to cancel out any idea there's anything other than that, they say it's one without a second. You'll see the same thing in Buddhism if you look closely enough, where they use different terms, where they say it's non-conceptual, ever-fresh, presence awareness. And they add onto that just this, nothing else. And there's nobody, if you look at that moment, can negate who is not aware of being present right now. That presence awareness is right where you are right now. There might be all sorts of concepts going on in the mind that seem the experience. But they're pointing out that you are already then. So there's nothing to seek and nothing to get. Just recognize and realize your natural state. Christianity and other traditions pointing out so-called truth or reality. I say it's omnipresence, omnipotence, omniscience. I'm talking about three things, the three aspects of the one. Omnipresence is total presence, omnipotence is total power, and omniscience is total intelligence. And what they're saying, not three things, three aspects of the one, just like steam, water and ice are three aspects of H2O. I'm pointing out the totality, again, of everything. Doesn't leave room for you, me, or anybody, or anything else.
Sorry.
So that's what we point to. You put it very simply. And they call it non-duality. And those statements I just made point out there is absolutely no duality in non-duality. When people come here and say, yeah, I saw it and understood it, but then something came up and obscured it. Well, in what we've just said, it's non-duality, no matter what comes up. Could it be anything other than non-duality? Whatever comes up appears to be dualistic. But you got to understand that that all it is appearing to be so, like in the manifestation. The manifestation is a dualistic manifestation, and it couldn't be otherwise. There couldn't be day without night, or silence without sound, movement without stillness, winter without summer, and all the rest of it. You know, going. But didn't the ancients tell us when they realised it, that the manifestation is Maya, it's illusion? And have a look at that. You can see that for yourself, because it is not a static thing. The definition of reality is that which doesn't change. But this manifestation is transient, it's constantly changing. And you are no different from the manifestation. That body is a pattern in that manifestation. That body's changing right now. You haven't got the same body you walked into this room with. Souls are dying and being replaced. So we miss out on the simplicity of it and keep going, getting locked into the mind. And to point out, if you look at mind, is there such a thing as mind? Can anybody show me a thing called mind? You realize there's nothing there. Any substance or any independent nature, you can say this is mind. All that mind is thought. And if you were mind, you'd be a particular thought. Well, what particular thought are you? And you realise that sense of presence, the knowing that you are, translates through the mind as the thought, I am. So I am is just a thought. Well, we don't leave it as that. We add to that I am other thoughts, concepts and images, and form a conceptual image of what we think ourselves to be. And what is thought, if you think in the mind, think of it, investigate thought. Because one of the things we say is that the false cannot stand up and investigate. Have a look at some of these things we've taken as real, taken to believe as that. When you investigate them, they'll fall apart. Because they can't stand up to that investigation. What is thought? You see, it's subtle. And when you're thinking silently, you'll notice there's a seemingly somewhat of a movement going on somewhere in that pattern you're calling in. And when it comes out as words, like these words are now, what's word? Isn't word sound? And what's sound? Isn't sound a vibration? So all these thoughts and concepts are nothing, vibrating patterns of energy. Just the same as the body. You believe you are this body mind. But are you this body? Can you find a static point anywhere in this body where you can say this is where it be? Where I began, this is what I am. You realise if you look closely enough, you can't find any more. And what is this body made up of? You can't find a point in the body, so this is where it all begins, this is what I am. What is this body made up of? You realise this body is made up of elements. Made up of air, earth, fire, water, space. Just the same as the elements around you, which all the rest of this manifestation. It can be broken down into energy. So this body is no different from it. It can be broken down into energy, vibrating pattern of energy. All those elements can be broken down to subatomic particles. Now, can you separate yourself from those elements if you think you're a separate entity individual? Stop breathing. Take the air out of your body. See how long it lasts. Take the water out of your body. Take the element fire, the body temperature. Get off the earth, get out of space. You realise you're not separate from these elements at all. They're all natural pattern shapes and forms expressing in pattern shapes and forms. We take the pattern shape or form to be the reality. See, just a vibrate. Just like all the waves that appear on water, are they ever anything other than the water? They're not this idea that they are separate, are they? All those elements can be broken down into vibrating patterns of energy. So you can't say you are the body or this mind. Look at a little bit further. When did this body begin? You'll say, I began at birth. But can any one of you actually remember your birth? And you look at that day, you can't remember birth. You're only going back as far as about two and a half, when the capacity of reasoning developed in you before that. And you look at a little child before that age, and so he's got no idea. He's separate or anything at all. He hasn't learned any words. He's seeing, he's hearing, he's tasting, touching, smelling. The functioning is expressing through that pattern, life essence, and living that pattern. But he hasn't learnt any words at that stage. He's not discriminating anything. If he's hungry, he'll cry. If he's happy, he'll gurgle. If he sees something, he'll be attracted to it and push something up. But he hasn't learnt any words, and he's not discriminating anything. He's just acting spontaneously and naturally. So you don't remember your birth, so how can you say you were born? And when did you begin? We'll go back as far as your father and your mother. That animating intelligence energy, what I call intelligence energy, the life essence, patterning and shaping and forming your father, enabled a sperm to form in that pattern, a microscopic particle. The same intelligence energy, patterning and shaping and forming, expressing through that pattern you call your mother, enabled another microscopic particle that made them to form. And that ovum was suffused with intelligence. It wasn't just in there willy-nilly. It was suffused with intelligence because it attached itself to the wall of the uterus. It knew what to do. And the sperm was suffused with intelligence. It knew what to do. It swam to the ovum. It wasn't just that dead thing. It swam to the ovum. And it knew what to do. It penetrated the ovum. And when that penetrated, that cell doubled and redoubled and doubled. And that blueprint that is you today, coming in that patterning, is what you are today. So where was the entity then that you believe yourself to be today that had any say in it whatsoever? Because there's always been that function, natural function, spontaneous intelligence energy. It's been vibrating, patterning, shaping, forming. As the Buddha told you a couple of thousand years ago, he called it a cognizing emptiness. An emptiness suffused with that intelligence. Not that we are cognizing the emptiness, but the emptiness itself is doing the cognizing. And you're appearing in that cognizing as a pattern, shape, form, a pleat, but which is no different from the essence. It's only appearing to be so. Why? And he made the statement that emptiness is form, pointing out that this pattern, shapes and forms, we turn around our ways, and the form can be nothing other than emptiness, pointing out it's all the one essence. Vibrating in different pattern, shapes and forms and appearing to be different. But there never was any difference in it whatsoever. It's only seemingly so. We've taken on the belief that we are individuals, persons. And then the ancients in their language pointed that out too. Where did the word person come from? Persona, the mask. Pointing out when we've got this mask of identity on ourselves. Do we believe ourselves today? Not the actual reality that we are. So this little child starts to learn words at about two and a half, because I say the capacity of reasoning develops in these human forms. That's the capacity we have that's more developed than what it is in birds, insects and animals, things like that, the capacity of reasoning. And they have other natural capacities much more developed than what ours. Capacity of, bird has a capacity of seeing. It's much better eyesight. It's much better than yours and mine will ever be. It can fly. We haven't got that capacity. But through the capacity of reasoning, we've learned to build ourselves glasses if our eyesight is failing, binoculars or telescopes enable us to see that. Now, this capacity of reasoning is very useful. But it's self-destructive when it vibrates out of way. It tells me I'm not good enough, or I'm fearful, or I'm anxious, or I'm unhappy. And through that capacity of reasoning, I've learned a bit of binoculars, glasses, and things like that, or I might have mentioned that before today, there's my memory. A dog has a sense of smell, a capacity of smelling, it's much better than humans or mine, sense of smell will ever be. Tigers, leopards, animals like that grow stripes, spots in their fur, are natural camouflage. Do you think the little tiger cub
sets out to say, I better grow a few stripes in the food, or maybe me a bit of tofu. Or let them say, I'll grow a few spots. Or does the innate intelligence energy of fashion, shaped and formed, but know what is necessary for those particular birds and animals? Chameleons change colour, insects can metamorphose, all sorts of capacities going on there. All pattern, shaping and forming, all this manifestation. I call it intelligence energy, I don't use the term God here, because we can get confused with that term, purely because we all come from different traditions or different backgrounds. Some of us could be agnostics, some of us atheists, some of us might be Christian, Hindus, Muslims, Buddhists, Jews or whatever. If I start talking about God, you're related to whatever your traditional belief will be, and all the concepts that are in that belief, and get lost in what we're talking about. We'll miss out on the direct pointing to the direct nature of what you naturally are. I use the term intelligence energy, and you've got to realise that's just a concept trying to talk about it also. And when I talk about intelligence energy, I'm not talking about your intellect, because there are different degrees of intellect in this realm. I'm talking about the same intelligence that's out there in nature. Have a look in nature and see that galaxies are formed out there, planets are moving around, Earth moving around the Sun, seasons coming and going, tides coming in and out. Doesn't that imply that nature itself is suffused with an innate intelligence? There's not some old guy out there on a cloud that if you pray to him, he'll give you this or do that. If you do the wrong thing, you're going to beat the hell out of you. It's suffusing every particle. And you are no different from nature. You realise it's that same intelligence that's breathing you right now. It's beating your heart. It's growing your hair and your fingernails. It's digesting your food. Replacing cells in your body. What are you doing about that as a separate entity? Just say, I've got to go. A few limbs today will grow something, or do this, or do that. You don't. Fingernails or hair, or digest my food. It's all happening spontaneously and naturally. There's no entity there that's doing anything about it whatsoever. But we've taken on the belief there is. And we've never questioned that belief, and so we locked into it. And because, and you see that all our problems come from dualism. Every ism that ever happened comes from dualism. Capitalism, communism, whatever other isms are, idealism, all these isms come from dualism. And the point of the outcome from the start, there's absolutely no duality and non-duality, but we've lost sight of that. To get back to that recognition of that state, just have to investigate it and see. You can't do much with I or me, but we've added to that I or me, events, experiences and conditioning, things that have happened to us, are added onto it. And so instead of us being that sense that I am, that represents, expresses as the sense, that sense of presence that expresses as the sense I am, can't do with that I amness. We haven't left it as it is. We've added that I am, events, experiences and conditioning. So I'm Bob, I'm an Australian, I'm a good fella, I'm not so good, I've got low self-esteem, I'm fearful, I'm unhappy. Have a look at this, the image you've got about yourself. And see, it's built of concepts. And all those concepts come from past events and experiences. So we're constantly relating to a dead image. All those concepts and things are past. So you see why we get into trouble. We're trying to relate from a dead image, and this functioning is spontaneous. It's constantly changing, constantly on. Just like pulling a bucket of water out of the river. What's happened to the river? It's left it behind, going merrily along its way, and the bucket of water is sitting stagnant on the bank. And while we're relating to this image, the same thing is happening. Can't get it. How did this image come about? Well, when the little child started reading, you can't do much. He learnt words from his parents. Before that, the little child hasn't got any words. And you look at that and realise that every word you've ever spoken or ever likely to speak has been learnt or picked up along the way somewhere. that boy had it. There's no world, there's no word you were born with. And if those words come upon you, you can't do much with I or me. So to give it some seeming substance, we add to that I or me, events, experience and conditioning, unpardoned, stoning, good fellowship. And going back into your mind again, are you this mind? But you see, you can't be the mind because the mind is made up of thoughts, and all those thoughts can be broken down into energy. Thinking is just a vibrating pattern of energy. And have a look and see how it vibrates. Then you realise it's always vibrating in the interrelated opposites. If you're not in the past, which is memory, thought is, you're in the future, which is anticipation, imagination. That's all it is. And within that range, it's constantly vibrating in interrelated opposites. Watch your mind and see how it does that. It's either good or it's bad, pleasant, painful, happy, sad, loving, hating, positive, negative. And the boundaries and limitations we're putting on it are the word, which we've learnt. Good, bad, pleasant, painful. And Shakespeare told us that a couple hundred years ago when he said there's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. There's this problem and thinking in concepts and words, we're putting boundaries and limitations on that which is unlimited, which is the totality. And that's where all our psychological suffering and problems come from. And belief in separation. And it needs to be questioned and looked at and see that there's nothing there with any substance or nature. All our problems are problems of this so-called ego. Because a little child, you know, hasn't got any ego until he learns these words. When he learns words like I or me, and his parents fussing around him, you're telling me little Johnny, you're a good little boy, and he learns these words, I, me, and little Johnny, which he didn't have before, then he starts to reason. You know, before that, he's just looking out there and seeing everything how it is. Now he's reasoning, that doesn't fit little Johnny. That is different from little Johnny. So I am little Johnny, but that's not I. That's not me. So then he feels separate from it. And with the separation comes insecurity and vulnerability. And that's when our search actually starts, because we've taken on this belief now that we're separate. We're separate individuals, persons. And we haven't only got that belief ourselves. It's reinforced by our parents, school, society, and nation that constantly reinforce that belief. And we're reinforcing it ourselves. A belief we're separate. So feeling separate, we feel incomplete. So we're looking out there to acquire, to amass, to accumulate, and add to whatever we can that we think will make us whole. Good job, good relationship, wealth, all these things. Acquire, amass, accumulate, add to. It'll make us whole or complete. We never ever stop to have a look and see that and realise that we were never separate in the first place. But there have been people down through the ages who have recognised that. And that's where this message comes from. It's been carried along all the way through. And it's anybody's for the taking. If you like to pause long enough and look into it and investigate it. So, as I say, that's where all our psychological suffering comes from, this belief in this ego, this self-centre, this reference point. But we say here, if you look into it closely, that the ego is a total fiction. It never existed at all. It's a conceptual image we've made up and believed in and given it some sense of reality because of that belief. Another thing we point out, that the belief is never the actual. You want to question all your beliefs, because they're not the actual. Look in your dictionary. The definition of belief is an unquestioned acceptance of something in the absence of reason. Acceptance of an alleged fact without positive knowledge or proof. Put all your beliefs in that test, you'll say there's not any belief. It won't stand up to that investigation. So we're taking on this belief we've separate. And lost our spontaneity. That little child was functioning spontaneously up until this reasoning developed. Then, with the reasoning, he thinks we know. We think we know better. We think we're much smarter than the natural intelligence energy functioning. So it loses our spontaneity after a while. And when we lose that spontaneity, what do we do? You know, we're relating constantly to the me. So you see, all our problems are problems of relationship. Relationship or relativity is dualism. So we've taken on this dualistic stance. And all our suffering comes about from that. And you look at it, it's only me that can be unhappy. Only me that can be fearful. Only me that can be anxious or depressed. So me is the cause of my anxiety, my depression, my self-pity, my unhappiness. And they're the effects of the cause me. And that's all that so-called karma is. You hear all these stories about karma in the so-called spiritual circles. And that's all that karma is, it's cause and effect. But what happens if I question it and ask myself, can there be an effect without a cause? And have a look at it. If you're not relating to a cause, where can the effect lodge? It must move on. It's got nowhere to stay. But we're related to this conceptual image, so it stays there. And all the anxieties and fears that carry on because of that. Have a look at nature again. You'll see that nature is a dualistic manifestation, as I pointed out before. Couldn't be done without light or science without sound. But there is no ego in nature. Nature hasn't formed a reference point of ego. So day is never fighting with night. Silence is not fighting with sound. Winter is not fighting with summer. And stillness is not resisting movement, or went the other way around, whichever way you put it. Nature is constantly vibrating in interrelated opposites, but it's not attaching or fixating on any of it and get locked into them. If we fixate on something, get locked into it, and it beats the hell out of us. You learned when we were kids, sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. You get a belting with a stick, soon the bruises and that soon start to heal. Somebody calls you a couple of nasty names or something. What happens? You hang on to it for weeks, what they said about me. Months and years sometimes. And suffer accordingly, beating ourselves up with the word, which can never hurt you. We never take any notice of that statement. And as Shakespeare told you, not any of the good or bad, but thinking makes it so. The saga told you, nothing can trouble you except in your own imagination. You're all pointing out towards all your problems is this thinking. It brings about this. So, that's what happens with us. If something comes up, instead of acting on it spontaneously, like we used to, we're related to the mere memory. And something comes up, oh, I like this, I had a good experience with it, I like it. We don't want the good things to go. We want to be with the good things all the time. Not realising this manifestation is transient. No matter how much you cling to it, it's going to move on. Like everything does. And it's there. We don't want it to go. So what do? We resist it. Try to keep it there with the mind. We resist it. And don't you realise that any resistance is conflict? If you're in resistance, you're conflict. And conflict is disease. In conflict, that's disease, is uneasiness, that's disease. If you're in anger, fear, self-pity, resentment or depression, that's uneasiness. That's the conflict we get. Something comes up again. And we're related to the me of memory. We don't like this one. And immediately we jump on that. We don't want it. Again, there's resistance, conflict and disease. But that's what's going on in our life all the time. Have a look and see for yourself. All this conflict and fear and all that is going on because there's some resistance or conflict going on. Some uneasiness. So you must recognise from that the cause of all your problems is the belief in this ego, this self-centre, or reference point. Well, wouldn't it be imperative to have a look and see whether it's got any power or any independent nature, whether it can stand on its own? This me of memory, that's all there is, a me of memory, in conditioning. Well, I ask you to look at it this way. You're seeing right now and you're hearing right now. Isn't that a fact? When you opened your eyes this morning, did you say, now I'm going to start seeing, and did it just appear gradually, a little bit and a little bit? Or was the seeing near, total seeing near immediately? And we think, because we've never investigated, that seeing is changing. It's the same thing you had yesterday, last week, last year. The thing hasn't changed, but the content. The content has changed. The content is continually changing. Same with the hearing. Woke up this morning, the hearing was there, and somebody clawed you in loud sleep, the hearing would have been there. And you realise it's the same hearing. The hearing and the seeing, just like your breathing, your heart beating, the cells being replaced, it's all spontaneous, natural functioning. So the seeing is happening. But ask yourself this, does my eye tell me I see? Is my eye saying, look at this bubble, look at that? My eye can't say anything at all. Just like my heart doesn't say, I'm beating, have a look at this. My eye can't say, I see anything at all. So the seeing is happening through the eye and it's translated by the thought, I see. And that's the thought. Thought is just a vibrating type of energy, it translates it as I see. The same with the hearing. The hearing's happening through the ear and the ear's not saying, listen to this or listen to that, not can't say anything. It's the instrument through which the hearing is happening, and that instrument is translated into the thought I hear is through what we call this instrument, we call the mind or the thinking process. So the seeing is happening and the hearing is happening. But ask yourself this, and remember when the thought I see comes up, it's no longer just a bare statement I see. Remember what we've added to this thought. So it's me, Bob, the Australian, the good fellow, all the conceptual image I've got of myself, now thinks it has the capacity of seeing. The same with hearing now. It's me, Bob, the believer in it, now thinks it has the capacity of hearing. So this conceptual image I've got of myself now thinks it has the capacity of seeing and hearing. But have a look at that, investigate that. Can the thought I see actually see? To do that, close your eyes, look around the room and see what you can see with a thought. You look at that, you realise, no, the thought can't see anything. Same with the hearing. Put your hands over your ears and see if the thought, I hear, can hear. And you realise, the thought can't hear, it can't see. So is the thought, I am aware? We hear this word, I awareness, and we know that awareness is there, we've got the label on it, awareness. Is that thought, I am aware, is that your awareness? And is the thought, I am aware, can't be awareness. The thought, I choose, is that the choice you make? We think we choose our thoughts. And why the hell would you ever have an unhappy or miserable thought if you could choose it? So you see, this thought up into this ego, can't see, can't hear, can't be aware, can't choose, can't do anything. It has no substance or any independent nature whatsoever. And see that, take that life essence out of that body, that intelligence energy out of that body. How many thoughts does it cause you? You've got the eyes, you've got the ears, you've got the brain, you've got the heart, you've got all the organs are there. But no life energy animating experience to it. You can't move a finger, blink an eye, or do anything at all. Just like your computer's got all that information in it, turn the power off. What information can you get out of that power? So it's that power, that animating intelligence energy that vibrates patterns and shapes this total cosmos, the universe, spontaneously and naturally and effortlessly, is doing it all. They give credit where credit is due. Believe this entity can do all these things, it can't do a damn thing. It's that life essence that's doing it all. This room was an idea in somebody's mind once, the art on the wall was an idea in months. The television, the computer, all these things were ideas in somebody's mind. And people say, I did that, I made that. But could they have lifted a finger, turned a screw, blinked, done anything at all, drawn a line of the picture without that life essence expression through that body? So you see, this belief in entity we put so much energy into in the belief and suffer accordingly because of that belief, can't do anything. It's a total fiction. And without that, say people believe they are doing wrong, but have a look at that. See for yourself again. People have been on the path, believing in time. Time is a mental concept. Space is just another conceptual image in the spontaneous manifestation. So if you see there's time and space, there's no duration, no volume, can there be a path if it's spontaneous? And can there be a destination? You realise without time and space there can't be a path or a destination. Where does that leave you? Have you disappeared right now? Doesn't it leave you present and aware right spontaneously in this moment? So while we were living in this entity, we've got a beginning because we believe we were born and we believe we're going to die, and in that duration in between that we take that to be time and suffer accordingly. And the recognition that there is no entity there, there is no person there that has any substance or any independent nature. It's just life continually, spontaneously and naturally expressing itself, and expressing through that pattern, shape and form which you're calling you, which is a unique expression. It's all different unique patterns, just like the tree, the bird, the earth, the planets, the stars and everything else are unique expressions of that pure intelligence energy. And they play, come and go, they disappear, but the essence itself is never contaminated or corrupted by anything that appears or expresses in that spirit. And you are that essence, you've never been anything else. That's what we point out, ask you to have a look at, question it, tell us all about it, live it. You're free to talk, free to open up and say what you want to say.
Well, is there a difference between Advaita and Advaita Vedanta?
Well, I think they mean the same, I'm not sure, I couldn't care less. But I'm not sure because Vedanta is the end of the Vedas, you know, and Advaita is a non-duality before the start of the Vedas anyway. It hasn't got no beginning, any beginning or any end. Labels, we're not concerned with the labels. You get him lost in the labels. You know. Have a look and see what they point to. And that's, they make differences out of it, we're talking about, really. They call it Neo-Advaita. How many Advaitas are they? Neo-Advaita, this sort of Advaita, that sort of Advaita. Yeah. Once you get into the labels, you're never satisfied.
You know, Bob, you talk about spontaneous a lot, you know, and one of the reasons why it would be spontaneous would be because we can't stop, you know, everything's arising around me, I can't stop that. Thoughts arising, I can't stop that. So I felt, you know, you once said to somebody here when they were talking about an emotion, you said, is there anything behind that? All right? Okay. So I was just mentioning this to someone the other day about spontaneous, you know, and that, well, you can't stop it. And they articulated their position rather well. They said, well, it's not spontaneous, really, because there's some, if I'm hungry, that's not spontaneous. There's something causing that, you know? And I can see where they're coming from with the cause, effect and cause world I live in. But in fact, you really do mean that. You know, there still isn't anything behind it, is there?
No, everything's fresh and new.
Yeah.
Ask yourself, when does now begin? You must say it's beginning right now. And even as you're saying that, it's ending. And as it's ending right now, it's the beginning again. So it's all spontaneous. Seeming continuum. That's what gives us the concept of time, is seeming.
Yeah, and seeming it to have something behind it.
Yeah, constantly fresh and new. That's what I said in that Buddha statement I made at the start. Non-conceptual, ever-fresh presence of awareness. Exactly that. It's ever-fresh. It's not time-bound. When you look at time, ask yourself, is there a past if I don't think about it? And you pause a thought, can you say there's a past or a future without a thought? You can do that right now and have a look. And you realize, no, I can't say anything at all without a thought. But same with the future. You can anticipate and imagine the future, but you can't. But that's all the past and the future are. Anticipation, imagination, right in the present.
I mean, I understand all this intellectually, and I do have glimpses of it when I'm feeling really in tune and I'm feeling lighter. But then I get bogged down in this search for direction. You know, I feel like this lack of purpose in life. You know, it's always the search for meaning, and then I feel like, oh, life's so boring, and you know, it's like this loss and this search. So how can I get away from that search for direction and meaning?
Well, as I say, search for meaning, you've got an idea or a concept that there's some future timing in.
Yeah, it's just kind of impatience that I feel like I should be doing something, but I don't know what I should be doing.
Well, you know, you need to take another breath, but do you think about that? If you conceptualise that and try to say, well, I've got to take another breath, but it's spontaneous, isn't it? You need to expand or contract your heart. Now, can you tell me what your next thought is? You recognise from that, you know, we believe we think the thought, but the thought is spontaneous also. This thought will come up. And, you know, whatever, you'll act on it or won't it, because that'll be the direction you'll go in, spontaneous, natural, functioning.
So just stop grasp onto this desperate search for meaning.
But it would require a self, you know, and it's probably one of the ways that the self keeps generating itself by creating time, because it can only exist in time, you know.
As he says, a meaning for whom?
It's like I want to create something before I die, you know. It's this kind of big... the ego wants to create something before it.
The ego won't create anything. The natural intelligence is, you know, might seemingly fashion, shape and form some creative idea or create, you know. But, you know, that'll come up spontaneously, naturally also. How many of the great inventors and things like that saying, I'm trying to work something out in my mind, and gave up and went to sleep and woke up next morning and the answer was there. And, that intelligence, innate intelligence, knows what to do. If there's anything creative going to happen there, it will happen. The thing is to be open to it, instead of trying to work, putting the brakes on it and limitations on it, by the thought or the word. To put the boundaries on it with the word. Just relax in your natural style.
Yeah, relax.
And people say, how do you relax? Well, just let go. How do I let go, people will say. Well, take a breath and hold your breath. And hold it as long as you can. When you can't hold it anymore, let me know.
And it's this search for goodness.
Do
you know,
that. Do that and say.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Holding your breath?
No.
Bob's very literal when he says hold your breath. He'd love you to hold your breath.
There's a good reason why he asks you to do it.
Then put your hand up when you need to take a breath, because that just points to spontaneity, you know. It's just spontaneity. So all the thoughts that you have about
these little things that he gets you to do, like look in the mirror and, you know, close your eyes and ask.
If I had the talking stick, that's all right.
My eyes tell you I see. Reasons he asked you to do that.
Okay, I did it, right?
You what?
Yeah, I did it.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
When you hold your breath, and hold it, put all your thought power into holding it, comes a time when you can't hold it any longer. And spontaneously start to breathe. Now, people say, I can't let go. But, you know, in that spontaneous... You didn't have to try to let go. The let go happened naturally and spontaneously. And you see, that'll happen with all... I look at what's going on. Not a matter of true people trying to let go or trying to relax. It's naturally and spontaneously there if it's allowed that.
It demonstrates that the so-called power of thought hasn't got any power. You know, the idea is hold my breath, and it comes, there comes a point where the natural impulse is to breathe. It overcomes the seeming power of the thought. And one needs to see that and recognise it for yourself. Otherwise, theory and, you know, somebody else knowing that is useless. Know the truth and the truth sets you free.
It's the same as the investigation that you took through, that you took us through in your intro book. Like, you know, are you seeing right now? In that moment, in that split second or that moment that you see, it's not the body or body-mind seeing. It's hard to imagine what you could say or what could be asked that would make that situation any clearer. Because it's clearly and obviously not the body mind scene. It's you know, that universal me.
Yeah, that's the instrument through which all these things appear on the express field. But without that life essence expressing through that instrument, what is it? Rotten cork. You break down, go back into the essence. And things come up and we say, well, that's not it, or I lost it or something, but recognise that it's all non-duality. There is absolutely no duality, but we think, well, we've got to change it, alter it, but even what's coming up as an obscuration is still pure non-duality. So it takes the sting out of the meaning you put into those words or concepts or images. It takes the sting out, they lose their hold on you, just left as they are. Leave everything as it is. Left as is means unaltered, unmodified, uncorrected. And it moves on. Just as in nature. Nature doesn't hang on or cling to anything. It's a seeming, it is a dualistic manifestation. It has no substance or any independent nature, but it appears to be real. But the ancients told us, it's Maya, it's illusion, it's only appearing to be so. It's a phenomenal manifestation. The definition of phenomena is that which appears to be, pointing out that any phenomenon is appearance only. Ancients knew that, it's in the dictionary. The opposite of noumenon is the phenomenon is the noumenon, the unmanifest. And the definition, dictionary of noumenon is that which is. It's the unmanifest, which is the reality. That's the base in which everything pattern shapes and forms and expresses on and in. And that's spontaneous also, it hasn't got any time. People talk about a million light years and blah, blah, blah. But what's the reference point? Where's the point that all begins? Can I find a point? Something that so-called has a beginning must have an end. But the spontaneity doesn't have a beginning. It's beginning right in this moment and ending right in this moment. That's eternity. Not some billion light years or 6 billion light years, whatever that is. This is eternity right now. Recognize it. It's called a cognizing emptiness. We cognize it, we've had taste of it all through our life, and it suddenly gets obscured, but recognize it. Recognize it hasn't changed, it's still there. What's appearing on it and disappearing on it comes and goes, but that has never changed. Unaltered, unmodified, uncreated. Just as it is.
Well, how could someone else's life be more interesting than your own?
I don't know. Do I?
You?
Well, obviously not. Your life.
your life itself, so how could someone else's life be more interesting?
Yeah, but is there somebody else's life there?
Oh, no, it's his life.
There's a sagrat, there is only life. There is nobody who lives a life. So what are the patterns, you know, that express a spiritual thing? Very ordinary, very brilliant. There are all sorts of different ways it can express. Still that one essence that's putting all the shapes and forms and energy in that door.
So the value of goodness is just part of that duality, really, isn't it? Valuing goodness.
Yeah, and badness. Yeah. If they're seen as the one, you're going to lose their sting. Still appear, but won't hang around. Like, see, everybody in this room will have a concept about you. And you will have a concept about everybody in this room. And you've got a concept about yourself. Which concept would be right?
None of them.
None of them. So that means there's nobody superior to you from that point of view, nobody inferior to you. And what would you want of the other person? So it's all in this conceptualising that we believe somebody has something that we want or need or should have. If you haven't got that concept or image about them, you know, people go to war about these concepts and ideas, you know. Think they've got more than what I've got, we'll take them over and get it from them and things like that.
So then what has got goodness? What's the concept of goodness then?
It's all good, if you like. It's all energy expressing in different patterns, shapes and forms. But Shakespeare told you nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it. So it's only the conceptual idea or concept you've got about it. But in the way of goodness, it's just one essence appearing and expressing as everything, non-dual.
There's a lot of pressure to be good. There's a lot of pressure to be good.
See, it's a natural love of being, if you like. It's all that love of being. They call that goodness, well, about it, the bliss of being. Satchitananda, existence, consciousness, bliss. Existence is being, consciousness is knowing, and the bliss is loving to be. We all love to be. And if that love to be or goodness is not shining out, because it's seemingly obscured by the other, you know. It's happiness and unhappiness. You know. But left as it is, it'll always be there. It's always there. It's there right now. What's stopping it from expressing?
So what's guilt then?
Guilt is something that's taken on by the me, the image.
It's the feeling of not being good enough.
Yeah. That's how the mind and the belief in this image functions, always in the interrelated opposites. Either good or bad or somewhere within that range, pleasant or painful, happy or sad, always within that range. And the boundaries we're putting out, the good, the bad, the pleasant, the painful. But if it's just a spontaneous functioning, nothing either good or bad, as Shakespeare said, but thinking makes it so. Now in nature hasn't got any boundaries or labels. As Banky told you a couple hundred years ago, and then Monk, he called it the unborn Buddha mind. He says, everything is perfectly resolved in the unborn mind. And it is. Nature is, to our point of view, from some point of view, it might seem very chaotic and terrible, but nature is constantly resolving itself. Quite naturally. Tsunamis will come and blow the place apart. Well, they blow themselves out. Fires will come, burn it out, they burn themselves out. Ice ages have been before, you know, all different ice ages and global warmings and things like that have happened. Civilizations have risen, played around and formed. A whole lot keeps going on and on. And these patterns, you know, things will pattern express through these patterns. Do what's necessary to be done, or what seems to be necessary to be done. Yeah. But it's not only what we do in this way. Like, take the First World War, for instance. There were 60 million people killed in that war. 60 million. The people were all over in Europe, all the soldiers and that over in Europe. They came back to their natural countries, and with them they brought a thing called the Spanish flu. Took it back to all the countries. And that wiped out 80 million. A little microbe. Same intelligence as in fucking shirts. And down through the ages, that's always been. There's been bubonic plagues and things like that have wiped people out, fevers and things like that. But nature carries on. So, though we think we're so important, you are important as that unique expression, but not as the individual, as the person. Because belief in that persona, you're going to get yourself into trouble. You're going to suffer. You're going to be fearful or anxious, depressed and unhappy or miserable.
Bored.
Yeah. And our whole education just goes into the specialness of that. You know, your opinion is important to us. You know, that's our that's education.
Well, that's part of the functioning also. Enables us to be educated. You know, it's part of the human, semi-human reasoning, the capacity of reasoning, and it evolves as it goes along. You know, look at us in our lifetime now. Simply evolved itself.
So, but what about consciousness, the concepts of, or the idea of being more conscious or less conscious, like even in our path? I know you're saying before there was no path, but even things like entities that can attack us and things like that, or you know, there being even the things like the angel realms, stuff like that. Like
which?
Angel realms. Do angels exist? You know, all that sort of stuff. Are we ever really in danger of being attacked by demons or extraterrestrial entities and things like that?
If you believe in them, you could, then.
There's no
guiding angel sitting in our shoulders with characters.
No.
No, like, I mean, so you can conceptualise or dream up these things, but there's only the one essence, the only one essence.
One expressing as everything, God.
Yeah.
And that can be God or intelligence or...
And all those things that you talk about, no. In the manifestation, you know, they can be seemingly real in the patterning, shaping and forming, but their natural essence is nothing. You know. They have no substance or any independent nature of themselves at all. All valid in the reason, just like a dream is seemingly valid. But you go to sleep at night and you dream. In that dream you can see yourself, you know, in a house or in the hills or in a boat, anywhere at all in that dream, anything like that. With the other people in the dream, and you see yourself talking to them and interacting with them. And when you wake up, what happened to the dream? Doesn't it all disappear? And you, the dream character in the dream, is doing all these things, has disappeared along with it. Then you're left with this dream character. Now, when did that dream have any existence, any reality? It never ever did. This is the same, this is a waking dream. And this has been, while you're in it, it seems very real and very substantial. Recognise, you know, that you are being lived and expressing truth, so enjoy it, you know. Spontaneous what happens, you'll do what's done. But not relating it to the me in memory, it can be much a natural relation and a natural spontaneous functioning instead of a contrived effort or contrived activities and things like that, you know. That's what I'm saying. Let it rest in its uncontrolled, spontaneous naturalness. Mm.
dropped your phone. So what is boredom? It's just part of all the same stuff, really, isn't it?
Who is bored?
Because it's got something to do with time, hasn't it? It's the concept of time, isn't it?
Ask yourself, who is bored? Then you say, well, it's me that's bored, isn't it? And you say, well, wait a minute, this gives you a chance. Well, where is this me? What is this me? Give you another chance to look and see if you can find anything with any substance or any independent nature that can be bored. And that very looking and trying to find it will take you out of boredom. Because if you do, the activity won't be
bored. That's what I was going to say with the boredom. It's coming here, it changes that. There's always something to do. There's something that just makes it more interesting to have a little investigate as, you know, into where's this entity that's bored.
Something to pass the time.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. The time is spontaneous, isn't it?
It's only a me that can be bored, and me is a resistance to what is. So boredom is like a judgment. I don't like this. I need some stimulation. I want something different. I want everything to be different.
Yeah, I know, I understand that, but I keep forgetting it. Sometimes I remember, when I'm not bored.
You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. If the horse is thirsty, it'll drink.
When that boredom is there, ask yourself, what's the next thought? See what your next thought, another thought will come up, sure do. Then step over that and say, what's the next one?
Yeah, I'm probably feeding it because I keep thinking all my life that I'm bored.
Yeah.
I'm feeding it. That's right. I come back to that. It's like I'm lonely. Then you just, it's feeding it. It's that thought, isn't it? And it just gives strength, makes it stronger. Yeah. And then you distract yourself and forget about it for a while.
And they say, I'm thought. Lonely. You create that situation. There's never any loneliness. You know, you can commune. You mean with a cat or a dog or a stone or a blade of grass or a little tree or something like that, and you're communing with something, you know. Not isolated or alone at all. When you say you're isolated or alone, separate yourself, you know, it can be seeming lonely. But see, the one essence appearing and expressing is everything. Recognise that life essence in at all.
Robin Williams said the worst thing, he thought the worst thing was to be lonely. To be alone, but then he realised that the worst thing was being lonely in a crowd.
Yeah, but you can be. Yeah. You must separate yourself and think about it. And if you think you're lonely in a crowd, just smile at somebody on the street.
Smile at somebody?
Yeah. And I'll either smile back or frown or curse or something. Through the community. Communed with them.
I was doing a delivery in Fitzroy once, and I said hello to a bloke in the street, and he said, oh, shove off, you poof. Actually hurt me, Bob. I'm carrying it round.
That stopped a lot of medicine.
Very well with that.
That stopped the loneliness.
Yeah, there was some connection there.
Yeah, there was.
Sometimes people do see right through us.
Glad you're back.
It was an affirmation of your existence.
It was.
Yeah.
I was there.
Confirmation.
But even in recognising this, you know, people will not have the same concept of because they recognise there's no resistance there and they'll communicate with you more easily and readily. While we're going along with this concept about ourselves, people recognise or notice the resistance. And you can see where everybody's coming from when you're in that viewpoint yourself, because you recognise what they're all so-called in resistance, you know. And so you can.
And we don't like people like that because we think they pretend they've got an image problem, you know.
Well, they have. That's all the problem is.
the image,
a conceptual image.
Yeah.
How's the emptiness?
Empty.
Not cognizing. They use the metaphor of space-like awareness, saying it's like space. Space is empty. And all this manifestation is nothing but the content of space. So-called things. When they say no thing, I'm talking about a vacuum or a void, but no thing, the pattern, shape and form of the things, is not given any credence. Now, all this manifestation is made up of things. Space is full of things. Space is empty, and can something come from nothing, from no thing? You know, something can not come from nothing, because all the things that are appearing in it are nothing, no thing also. Only appearing to be different. So it's still that, always and ever that cognizing empty. That has no beginning, no end, no birth, no death, no time, no space, no past, no future, no height, no depth. But you can't negate it. No one in this room can say, I am not. Even if you try and tell me you're not, you must recognise something there is enabling you to say, I am not. Now it's non-negatable, but you can't grasp it. You can't grasp it. That's what I say in the King of the Sword, can't cut it, the fire can't burn it, the wind can't dry it. The water can't drown it, purely and simply because it contains all of those things. And none of those things can ever contain it. You can't contain it. It contains you also. What they believed in you. But you is it. Or it is you.
It's like trying to find yourself. You can't find yourself because you know you're not there.
Did you ever lose yourself?
That's right. It's not who am I, but where am I?
It's a bunch of time to look for who am I? Who am I? Try, you know, must form, try to form some concept to grasp it. Instead of asking, who am I? Ask yourself, who was asking that question?
Who wants to know?
Yeah. Who was asking that question? You realise that the question, who am I, is the very questioner. The questioner and the question are the same thing, a vibrating pattern of energy. There can't be a questioner without a question, and there can't be the question without a questioner. So they cancel each other out. If they cancel each other out, you don't have to look anymore. But they don't realise that, they keep looking for who am I, who am I, who am I.
Like a dog chasing its tail.
Pardon?
Like a dog chasing its tail.
Seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling. The eye energy of it gives us something happening in its immediacy. You're seeing right there. And the thought comes up, I see. As soon as that thought comes up, you form the seer, a subject. The eye see becomes me and see, that becomes a subject. And the eye see the chair or the table, whatever you see, becomes the object. So seeing is seemingly divided into subject object, duality. But can there be a seer without seeing? Look at that. Can there be a seer without seeing? Realize that you can't be a seer without seeing. Can there be the seeing without seeing? There can't be the seer or the seeing without seeing. So seeing, though it's seemingly divided conceptually, in essence, it's never divided. It's the same with the thinking. I think, can there be a thinker without thinking? There can't be. Can there be the thought without thinking? There can't be. So it's not divided. Tasting, the judging, a whole lot. Seemingly divided, it never was, never could be, never will be. Subject, object is dualism. Every ism that ever happened comes about because of dualism. Capitalism, communism, idealism, this ism, that ism.
So what is asking the question is the same as the asking.
Yeah. Question is the question. Question is the question. Not two. It's the same as there's no seer without seeing. No seeing without seeing, not two.
Why? Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Why not? Why not? Expresses whichever way it does. The expression is there. But how real or actual is the expression? When you look at it. Where does the dream go when you wake up? You realise the dream was never there. What were you before you were born? As I say, the sailors say, what were you 9 months before conception?
People ask the question, who am I? And it's kind of madness, really, if you think about it. Because, you know, who's going to answer that? It's like going into the bathroom and looking at yourself in the mirror. If that reflection of yourself opened its mouth and said something to you, you would shit your pants. You would sell the house, you would move to another city, another country, and try to blot it out. It'll never do it, though.
That's the point of the question, though, isn't it? Well, you can't answer it.
There's no point to the question.
But the point
you can answer it.
So it's like an amnes. Who am I? It's really the
amnes. That sense of presence translates through the mind as the thought I am. And what is I am? What is amnes? Isn't it part of the verb to be? Amnes, isn't it? So I'm just pointing out the beingness. You call God the supreme being, if you use that term, you call yourself a human being. Take away the label supreme, take away the label human, try and separate the beingness from out of it. It applies to everybody in this room. Don't put any labels on anybody in this room. I mean, what's there? It's just pure being. It's being a chair, we know that. Being a carpet, being you, being me. They're all labels, concepts we've learned to put onto the beingness. Negate the beingness if you can. There's no circumstance you can just say, I am not. You can say it, you can shout it as loud as you like. Try and not do it. And that's right, you know, we're being, pure being, but then when we get into the mind, we think we've got to be, we're doing this practice and that, but we've got to become something. And becoming implies a future time. It's moved away from omnipresence, total presence, into the idea of a future time. No such thing.
So, Bob, right here, right now, there is no time for cause and effect, even though it's been very helpful for us to understand how things work around us. Right now, there really is no time for cause and effect. Yeah. So my friend who said, are they hungry? So it's not spontaneous, you know, because it was caused by the hunger, you know, but there is no place for it to exist. You know, where would it exist, this cause? You know, there is no way for it to exist.
No.
So, when you say it's all spontaneous, okay, I say it can't be stopped by me. So that's any other things you'd say about spontaneous, you know, what this word means.
Where do we get it?
Well, spontaneous means it's just as it is.
As it is.
Yeah. Now, is another part of the verb to be. Am, is. just tell you, everything is as it is, unaltered, unmodified, uncorrected. And in the spontaneity, it's constantly changing. It's transient. It's not static. There's no static point anywhere.
Mm.
Constantly fresh and new, where they call it ever fresh. Not, hasn't got any duration to linger as time. Because, have a look at it. As you're saying now, as you said that, it's already gone, isn't it?
Like conscious awareness, like compared to, you know, human beings, the only beings with conscious awareness, like compared to the couch or the house or a stone, like what is the difference? Is there a difference between being, or is it a superficial difference?
What is awareness? Is it some state or anything? I mean, it's that, just the expression of that sentient life essence and spreading through it. So all birds, animals and everything else has that sentience. And, but they're not calling it awareness or consciousness or anything else. Just a natural being.
And the inanimate as well?
Pardon?
And the inanimate as well, inside the house?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's broken down over so-called seeming duration, you know, the seeming time scale, it's deteriorating every moment. A rock will go, be out in the sun will expand it and crack a piece off it. It will roll down the hill, it'll change places, run to the stream, get more away. This earth is changing, constantly transient. There's nothing static anywhere. And there's no self-nature to anything. So all the totality, you can't be divided into self-nature. The Buddha told you that a 1,000 years ago. No self-nature, no thing. There's no static point. Can you find a static point in this body? So this is where I begin. And there's cells lying in that body right now, and I might see them. Being replaced.
And that's why you really can't ever see yourself, because you're just a part of it, and the part can never see the whole.
Going back to that awareness, you know, when you use the word awareness, you immediately form a concept about what you think awareness is, and you start looking for awareness. But if you ask yourself, am I unaware right now, what will you say? You say, no, I'm not unaware, so you must be aware. What did you have to do? Realize naturally there. Naturally there. You don't have to seek it, find it. Just recognize it. The same with consciousness. Oh, I've got to be consciousness. We get to form a label or an image about what we think consciousness is. We think we lose our own. We're conscious right now.
Can I ask you what Nisargadatta was like?
What he was like?
Yeah, like as a character.
He was a lovely character. Very easy going, easy approachable. Could be pretty, you could fire up if you pissed him off.
How do you piss him off?
Asking stupid questions.
Wasting time. It's a no-no.
So, did you stay with him for a year?
Yeah, saw him off and on for a year.
And he was a chain smoker, wasn't he?
Yep. Chain smoker, and the room was full of incense as well. Smoke from incense as well as cigarettes, yeah.
And you had a little high-pitched voice, didn't you?
I don't know, was it?
No. Not in the videos, no.
Oh, no, it wasn't high-pitched.
No. Quite deep, actually, quite masculine voice.
No, I thought it was high-pitched.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Different concepts.
Give the shit.
Sorry.
You can't live a moment ago, so why talk about all those things in the past?
I just thought because we had a moment.
Yeah, that's the trouble. We go looking for the messenger and worship the messenger instead of take no notice of the message. Listen to the message. Mm. It's the important thing. The messenger doesn't matter. It would sound like Christ was a messenger back in the day. Taking to be the thing and miss out on his message. And all the other great saints, sages and seers down through the ages, the messenger. Well, pattern, shapes and forms that carry the natural state of the real essence. Reincarnation and all the rest of future lives, past lives. That's dividing it dualistically. There is only life. There is nobody, never was or never will be, never could be, nobody who lives a life. Life is living and expressing as you. Understand that you are the life. That's what Christ told you. I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. People think he was talking about himself. He's not talking about it. He's talking about that I am, that sense of presence, that knowing that you are is the way. That's the truth. That's the life. In the translation, they screwed it all up. A lot of things. Says nobody can come to the Father except through me. That's what they translate and say to it. But he said, what he would have said is through that I am. Nobody can reach that essence without coming through that sense of presence that I am. Said, take no thought for your life. What you shall eat, what you shall drink, what you shall wear. Consider the birds in the field. They don't gather into barns, neither reap nor sow. And Solomon in all his glory was not, the lilies in the field was not arrayed like one of these. He says, your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Talking about the Father, that life essence. It'll bring to you what is needed. Just the same as it brings to the birds. And all is in that there. Get the blockage out of the road and let it function for you. He went on to say, well, for which of you by taking thought can add one cubit to his stature? Meaning a cubit is an inch or something like that. And then any of you make yourself an inch taller by thinking about it? Quit the thinking. Utilise the thoughts as they come up, but don't let them bind you. The belief that they have some power and independent nature in themselves.
To go, Bob, you might like to summarise what we've...
Haven't had enough yet? Come on, some of you people summarise. Who has the confidence enough to summarise? You're not working, you know it. Little bit. I'm too shy, or I'm too much. I don't want people believing I've got an ego.
That's the beauty, though. When you come here, you don't need to understand it. The presence speaks to the presence that's in you, and you need not do anything. You just have to sit here and listen. And you don't even have to do that. Because even if you don't, it'll work. The mind doesn't need to be engaged at all. So,
lazy bones.
What?
Lazy bones.
Thank you for that. That's very good summing up.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Someone will say, oh, I could have done better than that.
Why didn't I?
Yeah.
But all right, you?
Yeah, good.
Is this the first time you've been here for a while?
Yeah, well, last week.
Oh, right. I haven't been here for a while.